This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Monday, February 24th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Seeking UN approval for military action against Iraq, the United States, Britain, and Spain circulated a resolution today declaring that Saddam Hussein has missed the final opportunity to disarm peacefully. But France, Russia, and Germany, which opposed the war option, circulated an alternative plan to pursue a peaceful disarmament of Iraq over at least the next 5 months. The U.S. resolution is expected to flatly declare Iraq to be in material breach of Resolution 1441 and seek to impose serious consequences unless the text is followed to the letter and unless inspectors receive full cooperation. Secretary of State Colin Powell, currently on tour in Asia, said today that war could be launched within 3 weeks with or without UN approval, but it's in the next week that Iraq will face its most severe test of its cooperation. Robert Knight, Peace Watch producer in New York, Pacifica Station WBAI, has more.
The most immediate issue for Iraq is how fast and fully it will comply with the order of UN Inspector Hans Blix that it destroy its stock of Al-Samud II missiles and several hundred rocket engines and guidance systems by next Saturday's deadline. That's when the UNMOVIC inspection team is due to file a written report with the United Nations. Patrick Garrett, an associate analyst with GlobalSecurity.org, described the significance of the rocket's alleged 20-mile excess range beyond the 93-mile limit imposed by the UN in 1991.
The significance of the missile system is that they could be used against countries north of Turkey, as well as most certainly against Israel. The UN Security Council resolutions following the Gulf War prohibit Iraq from holding any sort or having a missile system of that capability in its arsenal.
Iraq's delegate to the inspectors, Lieutenant General Hossam Mohammed Amin, said today the long-range test was based on an empty vehicle and has asked Blix for a reevaluation of the average range of the missiles, insisting that they are in compliance when inspectors take into account the technical issue known as circular error probable.
Circular error probables are really, it's the figure by which people are able to discover about how far or how accurate or inaccurate weapon systems can be. And a circular error probable for a weapon system that doesn't have a guidance package, which is what the Iraqi government alleges that the Al-Samud II did not have when it was able to reach ranges in excess of 150 kilometers, the circular error probable for that would be rather high in that you might aim it at a particular area, but there's really not a very good guarantee that you're going to get extremely close or on target for the target that you're aiming at, whether it's a building or a park, etc. But I think that the thing that one has to keep in mind is that the UN Security Council resolution does not specify that, you know, if it has its weapons payload and its guidance system and is fully fueled, should not have a range greater than 150 kilometers. It simply says that the system itself, no matter what, cannot have a range in excess of 150 kilometers. So I think it's pretty certain that the system is outside of the purview of the UN's resolutions and will be dismantled.
Regardless of the disposal of the Samuds, the United States and Britain are moving ahead with a draft resolution asserting that Iraq is in material breach in any case, an assessment with which Garrett agrees, notwithstanding recent Iraqi cooperation with inspectors.
I think that the argument that Iraq is in has been within material breach of the Security Council resolution, specifically of Resolution 1441, I think that there's a lot of credibility to that argument. There's been some questions as to how much Iraq has been cooperating, the question of whether or not Iraqi scientists can meet privately without having to be tape recorded by UN inspectors has been a huge issue with the inspectors, and at least as an indication that the Iraqi government is trying to at least coerce the scientists in some sense or ensure that they're not telling things that they should not. I think the fact that the inspectors have found things such as munitions, chemical warhead munitions, as well as, you know, the idea that the Al-Samud II is outside of the ranges, I think those are very clear indications that Iraq is a material breach.
But Anthony Arnov, the editor of South End Press's Iraq Under Siege, disagrees with GlobalSecurity.org's assessment.
Yeah, I think the situation is one in which the United States is looking for any pretext it can find to go to war, no matter how preposterous or no matter what lengths it needs to go to convince people that Iraq poses a threat, when it's quite clear that in reality the material breach that the U.S. government claims is not evidence of any threat, particularly any threat that is posed to people in the United States. And the current conflict over missiles, I think, is being escalated out of proportion in order to justify a drive towards war that Bush wants by any means necessary. It doesn't matter to him what the inspectors say. It doesn't matter that they found very little evidence of meaningful offensive weapons capacity in Iraq. It doesn't matter that they found no nuclear capacity in Iraq. They're looking for war. And so I think they're trying to blow this all out of proportion. There's every reason to think that if the United States worked with Iraq, that the missiles would be destroyed, the Al-Samuds. But they're not looking to achieve that end. They're looking to achieve grounds for war.
The Anglo-American assertion that military force is a permissible reaction to Iraqi noncompliance is under intense debate inside the UN, with some nations, including Germany and France, arguing that the current resolution, 1441, does not indicate military force, as was the case with the 1991 Gulf War resolution passed before Iraq vacated Kuwait. Again, Garrett of Global Security.
Resolution 1441 can be read to read that if Iraq doesn't cooperate, or action has to be taken, or consequences, that there will be consequences, implying military force. And it can be read another way, which is that if Saddam doesn't cooperate with the Security Council resolutions, well, we'll sit back down and reevaluate the issue. So 1441 doesn't specifically spell out what those consequences are, which is definitely in contrast to what we saw in 1990 and 1991 with the first Gulf War. But I think that the resolution that the United States has submitted today, or is submitting today, will be somewhat more specific than what we've seen so far, and will at least spell out that armed force is one of the possible options.
Whether or not a second resolution emerges during Security Council debate following Blix and the inspection team's oral report on March 7th, Editor Arnov believes that the United States will inevitably push for an invasion.
If they fail to get a second UN resolution, they retain the right, as they call it, to create a coalition of the willing. That said, I do think that there's a chance that the U.S. will get the second resolution. They want the resolution, I think, mostly for propaganda reasons. It's understood in England and the United States that polls are against the Bush administration acting unilaterally, but a public opinion shifts if the intervention is seen to be multilateral, is seen to be part of a UN intervention. So the U.S. strategy now is to try to get 9 votes on the Security Council and to convince France, Germany, China in particular to abstain, not to use their veto power. And while France and Germany and China and other countries in the Council have made quite loud noises about the direction that the Bush and Blair administrations are moving in, I have little confidence that they'll exercise a veto.
Anthony Arnov is the editor of South End Press's Iraq Under Siege. Meanwhile, on the diplomatic front, France is introducing its own resolution calling for further enhanced inspections. Debate on that is scheduled for March 14th, which is also the date for which Iraq has requested the Arab League to postpone its emergency summit on a potential war in Iraq. In New York, I'm Robert Knight for Peace Watch.
Turkey's cabinet has agreed to the deployment of tens of thousands of U.S. combat troops to Turkey for a possible invasion into Iraq, ending weeks of tense negotiations with the Bush administration. Government spokesman Abdullatif Sanir said the measure was being sent to Parliament today. A vote tomorrow is widely expected. Peace Watch correspondent Aaron Glantz is in Istanbul, Turkey, where we spoke with him today about the government's decision, which goes against the tide of public opinion.
Well, Verna, today there was a six-hour meeting by the Turkish cabinet where the Prime Minister, Abdullah Gül, tried to convince the other members of the cabinet, it seems successfully, to accept a negotiated settlement between the United States and Turkey regarding allowing U.S. troops to launch their possible invasion of Iraq from Turkish territory. There are already thousands and thousands of troops and tanks right off the coast of Turkey in the Mediterranean. George Bush didn't wait for this decision to send the troops, but they did get stuck. So tomorrow they will probably get unstuck after the Turkish parliament votes to ratify this deal by the cabinet. It is possible that the Turkish parliament would go the other way, but everyone that I've spoken to in the parliament, either they say they're going to vote for it or they say they'll be one of the few who will vote against it.
Mm. Well, now people in Turkey are overwhelmingly opposed to their country offering assistance to the U.S. to launch a war or an invasion against Iraq. And Turkey's ruling Justice and Development Party, or AKP, made a campaign promise to its voters in the last election that Turkey would not allow the U.S. military to use its bases. Why did it not follow through on that promise?
You know, that's a very interesting question, Verna, although I would just make one slight correction to your statement, which is that they said they would only allow for this invasion to happen from their territory if the war got United Nations approval, which has also not happened yet. It's really amazing, the anti-war sentiment here. When I first got here 3 months ago, 80% of the Turkish people were against the war. Now the latest polls show 93% of people against the war, and I have actually met no one in favor of this war in 3 months, not a single person. Even the people that I met from the Turkish oil company, who stand to make a lot of money from this war, were against it. But the Turkish government is kind of stuck in a tough place because George Bush has made it clear that he's willing to go to war no matter who supports him. And the Turkish government is very worried for the plight of their people, who have lost so much money as a result of the first Gulf War in 1991, and so they've been trying to get some money out of this situation. And then the other thing that they're trying to do is to make sure that they don't lose their position as a regional military power, because if Turkey is left out of this coming possible Gulf War, then there could be a Kurdish state. And actually, we see that as a result of the negotiations between the Turkish government and the United States, we have a shifting of the U.S. position regarding the formation of a post-Saddam Hussein Iraq. Before, the United States was backing a federal model for Iraq, for example, like the United States of America, where we have California and New York and Texas as states inside the Union so the Kurdish people and the Shiites could have some autonomy. The U.S. has now shifted policy back to a strong regime in Baghdad, and this is seen by many observers as very favorable to the Turks. One thing that we don't know still is who will be commanding the Turkish army inside of northern Iraq. The Turkish army is planning on entering Iraq with tens of thousands of troops. They say for humanitarian reasons, but anyone who knows the history of southeastern Turkey knows that the Kurdish army has killed 30,000 Kurds in the last 2.5 decades. So a lot of people are very nervous. And the United States does not want, the Bush administration does not want the Turkish army to have command over its troops, because they can't do very much to stop the troops from moving.
Were you surprised over the weekend to learn that Turkey had actually struck a deal with the U.S., given all the failed attempts at negotiations last week?
No, I think that most people are surprised that Turkey actually held out this long. I would say that when I was here in early December, when I first arrived here, everyone expected the government to cave almost immediately. And they seemed poised to cave actually quite a while ago. But then after the United Nations Security Council meeting, where every foreign minister almost spoke out against the war, especially the foreign minister of France, Dominique de Villepin, and then you have millions of people marching against the war worldwide, this strengthened Turkey's hand, because then the AK Party was negotiating without a UN resolution, so they were saying, well, if we're going to go along with this war, the price is going to be higher. I'm frankly surprised that they are accepting so much debt in the deal, because Turkey already owes billions and billions of dollars to the International Monetary Fund. And one of the campaign promises of the AK Party when they were running, this new Islamic party, was that they would not further indebt the country. But I guess they feel like more loans is better than no money at all.
Mm. We know that last week they were bandying about some figures.
Yeah, there's so many numbers that were being thrown around, Verna. The biggest number that you heard was $32 billion from the Turkish side. The real question is how much in grants and how much in loans. As I mentioned, Turkey is already very much in debt to the International Monetary Fund, and the politicians are not keen to increase that indebtedness. Another fight, and it will be interesting to see how this turned out when all the details are released, is Turkey was holding out to accept loans and not have to implement the International Monetary Fund privatization programs at the same time. You know, usually when you get money from the IMF, you have to privatize services, and a lot of the country here has been privatized, including a telephone company, for example, and many, many things have been privatized.
Mm-hmm. Aaron, what about the political cost to Turkey for making this decision to allow the U.S. access to its air bases?
I don't know. It'll be very interesting to see, because this AK Party was a new party, and they were elected and indeed swept in power. Turkey usually has a number of different parties all fighting over in the parliament, and this party came to power just very recently on a pro-peace platform with over 70% of the vote. And this, I think, is why they were pushing so hard to get a good deal, because they were going back on their campaign promise. But if you ask people, I mean, everyone expected this. For months and months, people expected this on the street. And even though they were against the war, people have a very pragmatic streak here in Turkey. And if you ask them, well, what would you do if you were in the place of Abdullah Gül, they say, well, I would probably end up doing the same thing.
Peace Watch correspondent Aaron Glantz speaking with us from Istanbul, Turkey. Between 100,000 and 300,000 Iraqis live in Jordan, most of them illegally. Since 1991, they have fled Iraq for political as well as economic reasons. About 1 million have traveled through Jordan en route to Western countries, where they have sought political asylum. Most of these refugees are afraid to talk to journalists, but Peace Watch correspondent Raphael Kraft recently had the opportunity to meet with Abdu Ilaf, a 45-year-old Sunni Muslim from Baghdad. He arrived in Jordan 2 years ago while fleeing Iraq's dictatorial regime.
Why did you decide to leave Iraq to go to Jordan?
I left Iraq because of the conditions under which the Iraqi people are living. This is the result of the policy that our ruler, Saddam, is following. It is the policy that Saddam Hussein is using to treat all the Iraqi people by humiliating them. And that is what makes us leave Iraq.
Are you trying to seek a political asylum?
I already applied for asylum at the UNHCR 2 years ago.
If you are not satisfied with the political system in Iraq, how do you see the current situation? Are you looking forward for a regime change in Iraq?
Yes, it is the hope of all oppressed people in Iraq. All the Iraqi people are looking for a change, but they're not looking for destruction.
So you don't want a war?
The war option is very difficult. Nobody would want a war. Change should be carried out without destruction, without war.
How could things change without a war?
The entire international community can pressure the regime of Saddam to resign and to establish a national government chosen by the Iraqi people so that war can be avoided. But with him clinging to power, it will give the U.S. an excuse to come by itself and change the regime. The powerful European countries can pressure Saddam's regime to resign, and so war could be avoided. All the regimes in the region could do so and avoid all the consequences of a war. We have been living with war for 9 years against Iran. And also during the first Gulf War, we know exactly what war means.
All the Iraqis I am meeting here in Amman, they don't want to talk. They don't want to talk about politics. They don't even want to talk in the microphone. Why?
There are many reasons. Some of them are afraid that they will be followed by the Iraqi secret army in Amman. Some of them feel that international news agencies are being supported by the Iraqi regime. You know, these are security issues. They're worried about themselves, and they're worried about their families. But deep inside, they all want to talk, and they all want to explain the injustice and the oppression that their brothers and families are experiencing in Iraq. It's a question of fear about one's life and his family members' lives.
Do you believe that most of the Iraqi population share your point of view?
Yes, of course. Some people support my belief, but others think that the military option is the only option, because Saddam will not leave power under any circumstances. But those who are pro-war do not realize how much destruction a war would cause. Everyone has his point of view, but I think that most of the Iraqi people are in favor of a regime change. Some would say, just do anything so the regime can change. Others would say, no, war is difficult.
Have you been subject to problems with the Iraqi regime?
There are very few people who have not been subjected to problems with the regime, because the regime does not allow you to talk or to criticize anything. But you must talk, and if you do talk, you will throw yourself into a position in which you will be suspected, questioned, and accused. And especially if you talk about the heads of the regime, then you will face imprisonment and military sentences.
There are many proposals of new leaders after Saddam Hussein, if Saddam Hussein falls. Mr. Shalabi, Prince Hassan. Who would you like to see leading Iraq?
The most important thing is to change the regime and to establish a democratic, pluralistic, national government, after which there will be a referendum. If the Iraqi people want it to be a monarchy, let it be. If the Iraqi people want it to be a republic, let it be. People just nominate themselves to be elected, and people will choose. I don't know about the personality of Ahmed Shalabi or about his life. The important thing is for the Iraqi people to live a settled and secured life without war. We want a pluralistic, democratic society, and we want a constitution that protects all of our properties and protects all of us, the people. Anything like that is acceptable. No dictatorship.
How do you feel here in Jordan?
In terms of security, this country is safe. We feel safe here. In terms of living conditions, Iraqis are not allowed to work and are not allowed to stay for more than 6 months in Jordan. If they stay for more than 6 months, they will be followed by the immigration police. There are big differences between our life here and our life there in Iraq, but being secure makes us forget about the hardships. The way we eat and the way we dress in Iraq is much better than here, but the issue of security is the most important and the best thing here.
How do you do to live now?
Honestly, we try to work in jobs that are sometimes very far away from our specializations or age consideration. But we say, it's okay, it's a temporary situation until things change and our life becomes better. I'm trying to live on the very small amount of money that my family sends me from Iraq. They know I have undergone an operation and that I cannot work.
Will you try to go to another country now, a Western country maybe?
No, you know, before hearing the news about change, I wanted to go to a foreign country. But now, we are all looking for change, and we're all looking forward to going back to Iraq after the dictator has changed, and hopefully soon.
Inshallah, لصالح الشعب العراقي.
Speaking through a translator, Iraqi refugee Abu Ilaf, speaking with Peace Watch reporter Raphael Kraft in Amman, Jordan. And now the radio satire theater group, the Christmas Coup Comedy Players, bring us to Crawford, Texas, where President George W. Bush is meeting with Vice President Dick Cheney and National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice to discuss religion, rodeo, and geopolitical politics.
Jesus said. Jesus said it's easier for a camel to get through the eye of a needle than it is for a rich man to get through the gates of heaven.
Well, that's very discouraging, Mr. President.
I figured that out. And I figured out what Jesus was talking about there, Dick.
Well, what was Jesus talking about, Mr. President?
Jesus meant you need to get a really huge needle.
And a really little camel wouldn't hurt either.
Well, that's a good point.
A really big needle, giant needle. Comprende, senora?
Si, senora, presidente. Yo comprendo.
Muy bueno. I love your Mexican. You speak it very well.
Thank you.
Is everything set with the war with Iraq there, Dick?
Yeah, well, I spoke to the VFW and the veterans of the Korean conflict. They are solidly behind us.
Good, good. That's really muy bueno.
Yes.
It's a lot of buenos there.
Yes, it is.
However, I think they may be too old to fight. How can they fight a war?
Remember, Mr. President, we're calling it a regime change, not a war.
Oh, thanks for the reminder, Condi. I had to call for a regime change at my local 7-Eleven when they ran out of pretzels. I was trying to figure out the big needle thing with Jesus and the camel, and suddenly, no pretzels.
Oh, that's tough.
You know, the pretzel represents a small child with its arms crossed in prayer. Did you know that?
Oh, hallelujah, Mr. President.
Now, who is with us on our plans for a regime change in Iraq, Dick?
England, Mr. President.
Of course, England. We knew that. Who else is with us besides England there, Dick?
Well, that's it, Mr. President. Just England.
What?
Yeah, that's about it.
I hope you don't mean to tell me that other countries in the world actually oppose our war with Iraq.
Regime change.
Regime change, damn it.
So far, only 14 countries oppose our plans for a regime change in Iraq.
Okay. One country with us and 14 countries with the terrorists. That's what you're saying?
Well, 14 countries oppose us, Mr. President.
No, they're either with us, Dick. You listen to me. They're either with us or they're with the terrorists.
I agree.
Okay. Now, do me a favor, Dick.
Yeah.
Take these 14 empty beer cans out of the bag and line them up on the fence over there. See over there?
Yes, certainly, Mr. President.
Top. Go ahead.
Okay.
Where did all the empty beer cans come from, Mr. President?
Well, I did too big a blast. I had to wash it down before I had some kind of pain in my heart. Would you believe it? I'm just joking.
I've lined up the 14 beer cans, Mr. President.
All right, get back over here, Dick. Okay. We're going to have some fun. Get over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm here.
My, what a beautiful collection of handguns, Mr. President.
Now take the pearl-handled Beretta, Condon.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Well, okay, we'll take turns, Condon. You start with the ones on the left. I'll go with the ones on the right. Dick, you start us off with the name of a country and its reason for opposing our plans for a regime change in Iraq.
Okay, Germany, Mr. President, has ruled out German soldiers taking part in any American adventure in Iraq.
Oh, that's great, great. Mm-hmm. All right, Condi, deal with the Germans right now.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Get rid of them. Yes, Mr. President.
Good shot there. Yeah. Good shot there. Beautiful.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Okay, now give me a country, Dick.
Well, Jordan, Mr. President, feels a U.S. strike would be a tremendous mistake.
What's Jordan? What's Jordan?
I don't know.
Is that a country?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What part of the Mideast is it?
Well, it's over.
All right, line it up.
Okay. Now, Russia says they are against military scenarios and urge a search for a political solution.
Good shot, Condi. Next, Dick.
Canada wants proof Saddam plans to attack the West.
Screw him. All right.
Good shot, Mr. President.
All right, keep going, Dick. Keep them coming.
Okay, Japan says...
Who cares about those
They want restraint in dealing with Iraq.
I don't care.
All right,
get rid of them.
Okay.
Get rid of
them. Now, Italy...
goddamn Italians, too.
Well, they don't see any proof of
they
Iraq.
Don't fight for anybody. They all surrender. All right.
Yemen says,
I don't care about Yemen. Well, give it to me. Okay. Get rid of it. Get rid of Yemen.
Australia.
Australia.
Fine. Now, China,
they speak Japanese, too. I don't care. Shoot them.
Actually, don't. And now, Egypt.
Egypt, part of Yemen. I don't care, man. I don't care. Eat part of Yemen.
Now, Bahrain has expressed their determined
opposition. What's a Bahrain? What is a Bahrain?
Now, France.
France, I know where that is.
Yes, and they
must be on our side.
They want the UN in on that.
What?
That's what.
Give me a shotgun. All right.
Now, hold on. Turkey.
Kill the goddamn turkeys.
Well, I don't like it either. Okay. And Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia.
That would shake peace and stability in the world.
All right. Get rid of.
Well, that's it. That's all 14 of them, Mr. President.
We got them all, Mr. President.
Well, we got rid of them. Now it's one on our side.
Yeah.
And everyone else is on the floor.
Well, you know, this kind of teamwork, you know, bodes well for our plans for world domination.
You got that right, Dick.
Yeah.
The Christmas Coup Comedy Players is a production of Pacifica Station's KPFT in Houston and WBAI in New York. You can visit their website at christmascoup.com. You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.